It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal guide, the pilgrim on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks here on this beautiful day in Laguna Beach. What I'm looking at is LinkedIn right now. Now, LinkedIn, lots of people ask about how do we use LinkedIn. I know lots of folks are using LinkedIn to find jobs and to find employees. Another way of seeing LinkedIn is it's a large conversation area. Lots of people out there. It's like a big networking group, but it's a lot different because networking groups, you may get a name tag, but you don't get all the information that you get from LinkedIn as you approach somebody. Lots of good information is available by using LinkedIn to ask questions, to meet new people. In fact, our guest today responded to me from from a LinkedIn question that I'd asked him several months ago. He called up and said, I kind of put off getting back to you, but here I am, and I wonder if we could talk a little bit. What came up was, after an extensive conversation on the telephone, was a decision to invite him on about his latest venture. Bruce Roster has more than 35 years in sales, corporate finance, entrepreneurship, and venture capital. He has done a lot of work establishing a company called Zoom, and he works on the strategic direction, and he's also very interested in this new baby that he has called Value Court. And Value Court is another way of disintermediation. It's another way of taking a digital format and throwing all the face-to-face, traditional ways of doing business, traditional ways of dealing with disagreements, and throwing them up in the air and coming up with a new system. So today we're going to have with Bruce Rossiter and his partner, Andreas Ramos, who is a digital marketing expert. So welcome, Bruce.
Hi, Will. Thank you so much on behalf of both me and Andreas to have us on your program. We're looking forward to talking with you.
Well, I think this is going to be a lot of fun because you've done what lots of people have done. You've taken a look at a standard way of doing business, in this case, mediation or even court cases when businesses sue each other, which seems to be a regular, just an ongoing part of doing business today. But you've taken that and looking at it through digital eyes and made some significant changes. So tell us a little bit about Value Court.
Well, I appreciate that introduction about Value Court. I'm not going to take credit for the initial insight. There was a predecessor litigation attorney that had inspired me to start Value Court, but he was the one that gave some insights to it. One of the things that I learned from him was how much litigation costs. I had no idea. I mean, everyone knows that litigation is very, very expensive, but the context that really brought it to front for me is that in most cases, it's very hard not to spend in legal fees to prosecute litigation at least about 66% and many times 100% or more of what's at stake. And when I saw that pretty dramatic statistic, it really dawned on me that we need to have something like Value Court to provide a much, much lower cost of way of resolving disputes.
So tell us a little bit about what Value Court does.
Well, in its pure form, it's a form of arbitration. And, most of your audience knows what arbitration is, but I'll just give the quick synopsis so everyone knows how I'm picturing it. Arbitration is taking that same judge that would be in a litigation courtroom, but now he may well have retired, but he's still a judge. And instead of being in a courtroom, he's in a conference room. The usual arbitration is in that conference room. The party, one side of the parties and their attorneys get on one side of the tables. The other parties and their attorneys get on the other. And the judge, again, goes back and forth with the attorneys presenting you know, the side of their parties and calling for witnesses, et cetera. What Value Court does is essentially keep the same arbitration format, but it gives two different versions of it. One in which the attorneys can still represent their parties, but it streamlines a lot of the other processes to make it a lot quicker and less expensive from a process standpoint. Or the parties can elect not to have attorneys, litigation attorneys, represent them, and they just tell their own story. That winds up being extremely cost-effective when one realizes that about, you know, as much as 90% of the costs of resolving a dispute are from legal fees. So that's, in a nutshell, sort of the two versions that we have, and the one that's our favorite baby is the one that, allows the parties without counsel to tell their own story.
Hasn't there been a system for doing arbitration right now? I mean, that seems to, it's part of almost every legal contract, is that first they go to arbitration. Isn't that a pretty standard thing, to go to arbitration?
You're right on point. When one is sued in court, and so both parties join, and then they show up for their first session, the judge, especially in California, in the superior courts will say, okay, I want you guys to engage in mandatory arbitration before I set any trial dates or what have you. And so the parties go off and do this pseudo-arbitration. But at that point, they don't have any incentive to do much of anything other than not to agree. They know that they're in court. That's why they got there. They want to do their thing. And so most of those, I won't say most because I don't know statistics, but I know from anecdotal evidence that most of those arbitrations really don't get one where they want to be. And so what we've done is to create a process where there's a tremendous incentive to, in fact, do that arbitration as a separation from the lawsuit. So you file the suit, put it on hold because you don't lose your place, then engage Value Court and get the whole thing resolved, and then once it is resolved, you can go back to the court and drop the case because you resolved it.
What makes this different from the, you know, the American Arbitration Association or JAMS? I mean, we have lots of their influence in our neighborhood here.
Yeah, I imagine both of them are private companies, but I've done a lot of research, and as of 2 years ago, I came across a statistic that shows that AAA, the American Arbitration Association, is probably a $66 million revenue company, and JAMS at that same time is over $100 million of revenue. So they're the big giants in the industry. The difference, though, is that even though one can represent yourself without counsel, by and large, and I've gotten this directly with correspondence with AAA, by and large, and I'm assuming it's a very similar JAMS, the parties do not avail themselves of not having counsel. The rules are set up that you almost need to have counsel to decipher them, and since both JAMS and AAA get most of their business from referrals of something that started as litigation, the parties get going in court, you know, the second or third retainer check that the attorney asks the client to send in, by that time they spent a lot of money and they start to scratch their head and say, hey, this is becoming very expensive. And the average litigation attorney says, well, okay, maybe it's time for us to think about doing some arbitration. What we try and do is avoid, you know, that very costly set of steps where they've got to learn the hard way by, you know, almost spending half or more as to what they would have spent just continuing in arbitration. It usually happens in about the discovery phase of litigation when they really see how expensive it's going to be for them.
Yeah, one of my good friends, I think you spoke with Craig Williams, says that business suits are really the one of the most expensive jousting contests that you can get into.
Yep.
Tell me how, you know, this sounds to me like it's a wonderful idea. However, the turf seems to be controlled by attorneys. So how will you get traction for Value Court if all the referrals for mediation are going to JAMS and AAA?
excellent question, and I'm going to sort of set the stage, but I'm going to let Andreas talk about that, because that really is why he and I decided to partner up. I've known Andreas for a number of years. I have high respect for him. He's written 6 books on social media marketing, as well as search engine optimization and all the things that have to do with, you know, getting one's website and blogs in front of bigger and bigger audiences. So back to your question, the idea is that instead of going after attorneys and trying to persuade them to, you know, to send stuff over to us, we're going to go directly to the parties, the CEOs in companies or the CFOs in companies, and say, look, when you've got a dispute, you know, think of us instead of picking up the phone as a knee-jerk reaction and calling your attorney to go into court, and let us help you out, and then of course explain all of the advantages. We have one other way too, and that is that we ask, and we're going to be spending a lot of time asking companies to put our value court clause into their contracts, which calls for using us if there's a dispute. But, Andreas, can you just speak a little bit about how we're going to get in front of all of these CEOs and CFOs?
It's basically a social media play, using social media to reach people. There's tools to find people who are called influencers. These are high-visibility people. They're constantly blogging, they're tweeting. They're high-visibility within every particular market. We reach those people and let them know about what we do, and they'll blog about it, they'll tweet about it, and that'll reach their audience.
It's a pretty exciting process. I've been involved, from the business standpoint, whereas Andreas has emphasized the marketing standpoint. And you know, if you have cross links to some of the most important bloggers in your industry, and they link to you and you link to them, and you're commenting on their stuff and they comment on ours, after a while you get to know them, you can start actually meeting them in person, and after a year or so, you've developed links into people that have tens of thousands of followers that are hearing the word about what Value Court is all about.
Let's go back to the proposition that Value Court is. Can a company adequately represent itself without an attorney?
Well, that's an excellent question too, because it's not intuitive. We're also ingrained of thinking about having to pick up the phone and talking to our attorneys. The answer is that we do not presume that a CEO who is facing a dispute won't talk to an attorney. We assume he will have gone to his general counsel, whether they're in-house or someone that's on retainer, and say, look, we're having trouble with Joe Blow over here. He's not living up to the contract. He says that we're not doing this. We're saying that he's not doing that. Would you look the contract over and give us an evaluation of what our rights are and what you think of the facts? So there will be attorneys involved helping to counsel them. But if it gets down to the point where they have to resolve the dispute because they can't get it satisfaction any other way, then we provide that ability to do it without the need for having a counsel doing that representation. So your question still stands. Are parties able, once they're in the process, to represent themselves? And our contention is yes. We're all familiar with small claims court, where attorneys are not allowed, and parties have to represent themselves. The limits in California have recently been lifted up to $10,000 being in dispute, and small claims court is very, very heavily used if you're in that stakes range. We just take it one step further and say, look, represent yourself if it's $10,000 up to $1 million. Just because the stakes go up doesn't mean that they can't tell their story just as well. And remember, there's a neutral, a judge, who is sitting in that process, and they're the ones that know what they want to hear. They can ask the questions just as well as an attorney can try and prompt sides. The neutral is there, and he's going to ask questions back and forth. He's going to ask for the documents he wants to see. In our process, after that's all gone through, he'll write a tentative decision, and then he'll allow the parties to read the tentative decision and make comments about it if they disagree with his emphasis on a point of law, or they think that he's omitted to really consider a particularly important fact. they can bring that to his attention. He'll look at he or she will look it over again, and then finally come out with a final decision. So there's a lot of safeguards and common sense in our process that we know will give just as good a judicial quality decision.
Well, now, are you suggesting that we might be overusing attorneys, that they're not needed in, I don't know, would you say a majority of the cases that they're now handling?
The types of cases that Value Court is going to really shine in are in the breach of business-to-business breach of contract types of cases. We're not going to be involved in personal injury cases, liability cases and what have you, because in those types of situations, one of the value adds of an attorney is that they can advocate. And advocacy does play an important part of those types of cases where subjective issues are involved. Someone gets their arm torn off in a horrible accident and they're not able to work. The attorneys have to come forward and make an advocacy of how much that arm is worth when they're trying to, decide damages or what have you. But in a straight where facts drive a breach of contract, the neutral is very adequately prepared to ask the kind of questions that will allow him or her to come to a decision. You really don't need to have an advocate.
What happens if the losing side doesn't, it's just an arbitrator, right? I mean, if they don't comply, that doesn't have the force of law, does it?
Well, for anyone that has been in arbitration, whether it's through Value Court or JAMS or AAA, or the local attorney, there's lots of attorneys in Yellow Pages that hold themselves out as being arbiters. So there's lots of ways that people will have engaged or know about arbitration, and they know that once a decision is handed down, the neutral, that's what the judge is called, the neutral says, you're right and you're wrong. It's just like in the court. Plaintiff, you're right. Defendant, you're wrong. So what happens after that? There is a difference. In court, if someone doesn't comply with the decision, one can go back and complain to the judge, and the judges have sanctions and sheriffs that can enforce compliance and this, that, and the other. But all arbitration, whether it's Value Court, JAMS, or anyone else, has to rely on the contract that the parties have signed saying that they will engage in binding arbitration, such that if then, after the decision, one does not adhere to the binding result that came out, then the other party is still going to need to go into court to enforce it. But there are a lot of issues, there's a lot of factors that make it such that once someone has had an arbiter decide that you're right and you're wrong, and if the wrong person doesn't want to comply anyway, they're going to have to pay, according to the contract, they're going to have to pay the fees of the winning party. If it's taken to court and they lose in court, they've got to not only pay the fees in court for that process, but they got to go back and per our contracts, and they've got to pay the fees for the original Value Court costs as well. And they've already gotten a preview that they're not going to win because the neutral, who's a regular judge, doesn't believe that they've got a winning side. So going into the court the second time is not a very propitious move.
Well, what's the value proposition for Value Court?
Andreas, chime in, and talk about any of these aspects ourselves. If I were to tick them off in real quick succession, I'd say tremendous savings in costs. We'll probably never cause a party to spend more than a quarter, a fraction of what they'd spend in litigation. And surprisingly, regular arbitration costs as much as litigation because the attorneys are driving the bills. They're the same either way. So arbitration or litigation cost is a big, big factor. When you're in litigation, you're also going to have to be slowed down. It takes a long time to move through the system, so it's a very slow process. And the longer it takes to resolve something, the less one's rights are, the more the rights are being infringed on. You've got loss of productivity in your business and having to deal with all the process that's inherent in a litigation. There's a lot of process that takes your time. And finally, it's very stressful because it's an adversarial process. It's like knights of old with the jousting, and they're all racing toward each other trying to knock them off the horse, and wood splinters everywhere, and the guy that gets knocked off has got a headache and has to barely get to his feet for the next round. In our system, it's not really adversarial. The neutral is there, especially if there's not counsel back and forth. The neutral's there to just basically ask the questions and let them tell their story. And, if someone wants to be vociferous in the telling, that's up to them. It's not inherent in the process.
If you're talking about litigation in the $50,000 to $100,000 range, in that range, it's not sensible to bring in attorneys. Their fee will be greater than the issue being discussed. That makes it not sensible to work with attorneys. It makes it more interesting for the two parties to look for alternative resolution.
How do you pay for value court? Is this something like prepaid legal for disputes?
Well, we don't charge anything up front. In fact, as I mentioned, we're encouraging all of our prospective clients to put a free value court clause in their contract, saying, back down in the miscellaneous sections that everyone's familiar with where you have different aspects of things you'll do and don't in sort of a boilerplate way. We'd like them to have as part of their boilerplate that if there is a dispute, they'll use value court. So there's no cost of getting that clause in there. Once a dispute has arisen, we will do an interview with both parties. We'll get a feeling for how many documents are going to be dealt with, in all likelihood going to be shown by each party, how many parties themselves are going to be involved on each side, how many witnesses do they plan to call. Is this a complex case or a simple case? Is it one that's standard for the industry, or are they going to be setting some new ground, which then, of course, requires more work on the neutral's part? And we've got about 14 different criteria that we'll look at. This allows us, based on our experience, to make an estimation. But we'll even go further than an estimation, which attorneys can never do. They don't know how many hours they're eventually going to spend. We'll actually quote a fixed fee and say, okay, we think this is going to cost $6,000 or $10,000 per party, and we'll guarantee that. You will never pay more than that. We're able to do that in the cases where attorneys are not representing the parties, because then the only variable is how much time that neutral is going to have to put into it, and we will have already gotten one of two things from the neutral: either a really good estimate as to how much time they think it's going to take, or even a guarantee that if they go over that amount of time, it's on their nickel, not on the parties or us. So we can get a fixed fee one of a couple of ways.
Well, so we can write this into a business contract. Do you think that will be a stickler to signing contracts?
It'll never prevent the parties from signing a contract, because both parties have to agree to allow the clause to get in there. Let's take an example of what I call the bully. I mean, there's plenty of businessmen out there that are listening today that either know that they have a strategy, they want to sue someone, they're going to do it because they got a lot of resources and they're not really going to want to have an efficient methodology for the other side to be able to take advantage of. And so if value court were called to their attention, they'd say no. We want to stay in court, because they know that they have the resources to cause that other side to settle or to do something that is not in the overall best interest of that other side. So the sort of bully resource type of party is not going to agree to the clause, and even if the clause were in there because it slipped in somehow, they're not going to really honor it in one way or the other. This is not for everyone. It's more for what I call and consider enlightened businessmen. They're not out there to win at any cost, no matter how much it costs. They just really want to do what's right, and they think that they're in the right, and the other side thinks that they're in the right. That's a perfect case. A perfect case for us is when both sides think they're in the right, because then they're going to come to the table saying, fine, let's. Then they have an incentive to do it on an efficient basis because they think they're right. They don't want to use up their money just trying to prove that they're right. They want to do it efficiently. So when both sides think they're right, we've got a confluence and an ability to bring those parties together and get them to resolve their differences.
It sounds to me like you have a very interesting way of going about reducing some of these high costs associated with business disputes. Can you stick around for after the break, and then we'll get you and Andreas to talk a little bit more detail about how you're going to get this out, this word out to people?
Sure, we'd love to. Thank you so much.
All right, well, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors.
I'm Al Strauss with Sandler Training. Talk to you about rule number 38. The problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. When people have heard this rule and thought about it a bit, if they've been in sales for more than a few months, they almost always say, well, that's obvious. I've had lots and lots of prospects that told me what they wanted, I showed them what they wanted, and they didn't buy it. So it seems that it would be obvious. The problem is, most folks don't understand it, and you get in the middle of the conversation, and here's a prospect who's interested in something, you've got the something, and you just show up. And what you really need to learn how to do is ask a bunch more questions, because frankly, in most cases, the prospect doesn't even understand what the real problem is. And so if you ask three or four more questions about what they claim they need or are looking for or want, you're going to discover that it morphs, it changes, sometimes dramatically. What they end up needing is perhaps even diametrically opposed to what they originally said they were looking for. So ask the questions, don't take the first thing they give you, dive down into the real issues, and you're going to have yourself a much better day selling to this prospect.
Do you want a free analysis of your inbound marketing? Do you want it in 30 seconds or less? Then check out Marketing Grader, the free marketing tool from HubSpot. It's simple. Just go to marketinggrader.com. Enter the URL that you want to analyze, and Marketing Grader will instantly give you a detailed report grading your lead generation, mobile marketing, social media, competitive benchmarking, and more. It's simple, it's powerful, and it's free. MarketingGrader.com. And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, we've been talking to Bruce Rossiter and Andreas Ramos about Value Court, a way for businesses to reduce this tremendous cost associated with negotiating business disputes with vendors or customers or other places where, you know, legal disputes center around an agreement. And Bruce has shared with us some wonderful ideas about how using some online arbitration without legal representation can reduce those costs significantly. And now we want to talk to Bruce and Andreas about how they're going to take this wonderful idea, realizing that probably attorneys are not going to be cutting their own throat by referring people here, but how we're going to get beyond attorneys to the business owners and talk to them, get them excited and interested and willing to participate in something that is new, but does bring great value to them, and it is certainly legal, right, Bruce?
Absolutely. And there's another aspect of it, too, that just occurs to me, because I'm sure we'll have some attorneys listening. I hope we do have attorneys listening to your broadcast. And one of the things that I want to make very clear to the audience is that we're a process. I almost liken us to an event organizer down there in Orange County. Do they still have the meadows where one can go and listen to popular groups and what have you? those type of events, we're the event putter on her. We provide the facilities and the mechanism that the parties themselves can be the Lady Gagas of the world and sing and tell their story and do all of that, and the judge will then do the decision. So the point I'm trying to make is that we're not practicing law in any way. We're putting on an event, and we're doing it in a way that allows for a very efficient methodology to allow those parties to tell their story as best they can, but feel good that once they have told their story in the best way that they can, if they, one of them's going to win and the other is probably going to lose, but both of them are going to have the satisfaction of knowing that they had an ability to put their best foot forward, and if one of them couldn't quite make the case, at least they know that they had their day in value court to make that a story. But I do want Andreas to talk a little bit about how we're going to get this message out to a lot of different people. I'll preface the context for Andreas to talk about. We know that there's two big issues for value court, and that is, one, awareness that there is this alternative way of resolving disputes and getting the word out to lots and lots of people. And then secondly, will, behind a couple of your questions, and that is, will they receive the same quality of decision using value court that they would have otherwise? We think the answer is yes on both, but that's our challenge. And Andreas is going to be our magician that has the ability to get that word out. Speak a little bit about that in more specifics. TV, Facebook, influencers, all the things that you involve yourself in, Andreas.
Sure. We think that a lot of this discussion is happening on social media sites where business people are talking with each other. They're asking each other, I'm in this situation, I'm having a problem with a partner, I'm having a problem with a vendor, another company we're working with, and they're looking for advice. They're looking for help, how to solve the issue. Well, a great deal of this goes on in LinkedIn with the questions there, in the hundreds of thousands of discussion groups on LinkedIn. So we can identify those groups where these conversations are happening, and then when those questions, these kinds of questions are being brought up, then we can come in and help clarify, help with giving advice, telling people what possible ways of resolving their issues. A lot of this happens within these groups, what is called influencers. And most people don't realize how influential, how big of an impact an influencer has. It's not, we generally think that an influencer will reach 100 people. You and I, we reach maybe 10, 20, 30 people, but an influencer will reach 100 people. But by looking at studies and data, influencers actually are extremely influential. They reach 50,000 people. They have an impact far beyond what you normally expect. They're in a way like celebrities, as Bruce said, like Lady Gaga, where every single teenager in America knows Lady Gaga or Justin Bieber. These influencers in their specific topic domains, in their areas, are really well known. By finding those people and reaching out to them and letting them know what we're doing, they begin talking about it. It becomes part of the tools that they have for helping their friends or telling people about things. So influence is a very important thing.
Andreas, what I was going to say is before you go to your next topic, I just wanted to say one thing about influencers. Will, there are excellent tools out there that allow one to identify who the influencers are for their industry. I mean, your audience, they could be manufacturers of so-and-so. Well, there's going to be people that blog about their product, and wouldn't they love to know who those most influential people are? Well, just as there's ways for them to locate those through these tools, we can do the same thing with looking to see keywords. if we did a search with one of these tools under disputes and arbitration and litigation and, you know, all of those resolution, and we had a whole cloud, you know, those word clouds that represent the types of interests that we have, these tools will rank all of the people that are using those words the most, which are, you know, in as far as their blogs are concerned. And so we can get a ranking of the influential bloggers from A to Z, with the top bloggers being at the top through the highest amount of use and linkages, all the way down to the least influential. So when Andreas points out of finding and using these influencers, there's ways to systematically find out who they are and wind up being great benefits to you know, early stage companies like ours and ones that your audience has.
Mm-hmm. The tool can be very detailed. We can go down into very small topics and even verifying 50 to 100 people who are highly active on that particular topic. It's quite amazing how many people are actively involved in things. Another thing that can be done is you supply links to these
Are these proprietary tools, Andreas, or would you share some of them?
They're tools, companies develop them, and you rent the tools. You pay a certain fee to use the tools.
I have a good friend, and I know that Andreas knows him, so I don't mind giving him a plug. There's a guy named Dominique LaHaye, and Dominique has a company called eCairn, E and then C-A-I-R-N. And eCairn, one of these types of tools. It's got a couple of different pricing levels and what have you, but give Dominique a call, and he'll explain how any of your audience can use it to their advantage.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. I'm looking at eCairn right now, Social Media Marketing Solutions. Now, Andreas, one of the things that's interesting to me, when we think about, you mentioned Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber, and to me, when the whole music industry, as we knew it well, came tumbling down, a lot of that seemed to me to be younger people excited about it. I mean, these were the people using BitTorrent. People who were what was the name of that first one that did it? I completely forgotten it now. But you know, these were all younger people who were in their dorm rooms exchanging music, massive exchanges of music. We're talking about conservative business people now to fund to use your tool, aren't we?
Oh yes, because we've got projects where large nationwide insurance companies on very specific issues. One was for autism, for example. And we looked for people who were heavily involved in the caretaker community for autism. This is not a popular topic. It's not something that kids talk about. And even there, in very specialized cases, you still find 100 bloggers around the country who are deeply involved in the autism community. And there, if you reach those 100 people, it's far more impact than showing up on NBC Nightly News or showing up in a newspaper. People who follow these bloggers trust them a great deal more than they trust public media.
Okay, all right. So what I'm hearing is that there really has been a very significant shift in the intellectual value or the attitude that business owners, substantial business owners, have toward the internet.
Social media has, in a way, a bit of a bad reputation or a cheap reputation. People think of Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg and Lady Gaga and these things that, well, there's nothing in there for us. It's something that's for the kids. Behind all that, there's a tremendous amount of work here in Silicon Valley around finding the value in social media. So there's been companies like eCairn that Bruce talked about. There's quite a few companies that are doing really solid work in social media, making it useful for companies. There's tremendous value in that.
You know, and Will, you were talking prior to our joining you about LinkedIn. I mean, LinkedIn is a perfect example of how businessmen, by signing up and creating a group around what their company does, and then using the various tools of getting things out, to emails to all your customer lists saying, we now have a LinkedIn group, visit us at so-and-so. All of the things that one does to get more and more traction around the LinkedIns, the Facebooks, the Twitters, and then some of the more specialized areas are all within the normal businessman's grasp. And then, you know, what starts out is a few people knowing about you, then more and more, you know, you have the ability to aspire to tens of thousands of people. Just a quick aside, one of the reasons that I took to social media so heavily and teamed up with Andreas is that when I was living down in Orange County and I was in between jobs and I wasn't sure what I was going to do, I needed to get some money going, and I joined a very interesting company called International Profit Associates, or IPA. And I found myself literally knocking on the doors of business after business after business, talking to CEOs, finding out what their problems were. Now, of course, the biggest number one problem for the companies I found was, how do I get more sales? And so, of course, that leads into a discussion, well, what are you doing now to get sales? Most companies will tell you that the way they get sales is through referrals. But the problem is that they get a few referrals, they get enough of a book of a business going, and they, you know, they're happy at $500,000 of sales a year or $1.2 million or whatever it is. They don't realize that they can take that same concept of that is based on trust, which is where a referral is getting, you know, its power, is the trust that comes back and forth there. They can take that tool and multiply it 10, 100-fold, sometimes 1,000-fold through that same trust mechanism and social media. It's very akin to how they're doing business now, but it's using the new tools of today.
I'm just fascinated with what you're doing. I've talked with at least 30 different startups, and every one of them were under 25. And of course, to my way of thinking, of course they would use social media. That's the world they live in. Bruce, you and I are not under 25. And that's what I just find fascinating is, I mean, you're not a startup. You might have a new product, but you're far from a startup. I mean, you've been in business 35 years. So you're not a startup. You've got a new product. And what you're doing is using all those social media tools to get traction for this new product, and I think it's wonderful. I think it's fascinating.
Well, thank you, and you're right on the money in terms of seeing what we're doing. And even some of the older media, Andres, you've got a TV story that I know you'd like to tell. There's a lot of new stuff, but there's ways to even utilize some of the older media that doesn't look like it's affordable, but actually could be. Andres, do you want to speak to any of that?
Sure, of course. There's tools are available that simply do not get publicity. Google, for example, has built an entire TV ad capability. It's there. They simply do not publicize it. They don't talk about it, but it's there. Through Google, you can place ads on nationwide cable TV with using Google Bidding. And this is regular television. This is, you can choose the channel, MSNBC or Animal Planet. You choose from several hundred channels. You can choose the TV show, Oprah Winfrey or whatever. You can even choose the movie. You can choose by demographics. We're placing ads on nationwide TV, generally for about $10 to $15 per showing. Every time the ad shows on TV, we're paying about $15. We placed an ad the other day. Because it's a bidding process, we placed an ad the other day. Showed up in the mid-afternoon on a Tuesday. We paid 62 cents for the ad, nationwide TV. That way, by showing lots and lots of ads at a low cost, we get our name out there. We're able to build a brand around that with using branding concepts, logos, colors, and so on, and repetition. and pushing our message across and placing these where our target audience is looking at. We know with demographic tools and so on, age, income, and so on, that they're looking at, for example, CNN money, Lou jobs, and so on. Then we start placing our ads into those channels, into those stations. And as I start seeing our ads over and over again, and they wonder, what is this? What is this valuecourse.com? And they go over to their iPads or their smartphones or iPhones, whatever, or their computers, type it in, and it comes to the website. And we're able to, which again, with tools from Google, we're able to see that the traffic came because of that particular ad. You can track from TV to web now. It works.
Amazing. Amazing. So you're putting ads on national TV for 62 cents a piece, huh? That's amazing.
When that one showed up, we were all laughing like, oh, my God. Now we're thinking you would ask for everything we can imagine.
Yeah. So now you're using the ads to drive them to your website or to inform them. What is it that you're doing?
Correct. At this moment, we're driving it to the website. At some point, we may go into having the ad shows a 1-800 call me phone number, and then we'll have an answering service, 24/7 answering service, where people talk to the caller and then guide them through the process and then send them over as a qualified lead. Yes.
Well, Bruce, now you probably already know this, but 123 employee is in the Philippines. And they have four different campuses, excellent, very supportive virtual assistants who can answer the phone 24/7 for you. And the cost is ridiculously low.
What is their name again?
123 employee.
Is that the numbers, 123?
123, right. They're driving people to a workshop, face-to-face two-hour workshop. A step will be webinars that we're doing, and in order to get them into the webinar, we're going to use email and calling. Get this, for 40 hours of calling in a month, using your own list, it's $347.
Wow.
That is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
These tools are coming out, they're astonishing. It's the cost of starting a business. Bruce and I, both independently, over the years, we've started a number of companies. And 10 years ago, it was $25,000, $50,000 to get off the ground. Now you start a company for far less.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. And with the cloud coming, I mean, you don't have to go and buy all of the servers and all of that connection. I mean, my goodness gracious, between we bring a new associate on to help us with marketing. And all we do is connect them into Dropbox, connect them into Salesforce, connect them into Google Docs, Google Calendar, and we're up and running.
No more IT guy, no more IT operations. The devices, a $200 Google tablet now is enough.
Bruce, you're going to be looking for funding at some point, aren't you?
What's interesting about our company is that it's not a very high resource requirement because of all the tools are so low. But the answer is yes, because what I do want to do is have a much more robust budget for the marketing side of things. The operational side doesn't need much money. But
I want to suggest to you is crowdfunding, because crowdfunding with equity is going to be available as of January the 1st if everything goes the way that the Jobs Act predicts. And also there's going to be a two-day workshop, a boot camp for crowdfunding in Las Vegas in October, and the cost of it's only $250. They're going to bring together all the crowdfunding experts in the country and talk about what we need to do so that we have a million people with, you know, remember the word shovel-ready projects, so that we're ready with a million people to go into crowdfunding, because there's trillions of dollars sitting unused right now in personal and small business checking accounts, and they have no way of generating any revenue from that. They can't just they're leaving it in the bank as a safe place. They're not going to put it in the stock market, And so there are going to be opportunities to make small bets on lots of different companies. So if you go to crowdfunding.org, take a look at it. Go to crowdfundingroadmap.com, take a look at that. And in the same way we're talking about this disintermediation of legal services, music, and everything else that we're talking about, here's disintermediation of IPOs and funding.
And the entire venture capital world, all the bypass the angel investing, they have a pretty much a stranglehold on the funding industry. We've been following it very closely since April when this legislation was signed. It opens up a tremendous opportunity to allow people throughout the Midwest, the South, the East Coast to get involved with investing in companies and helping grow companies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the angel investors are very small. And so this whole crowdfunding opportunity is going to make significant change in the way that the economy is working, in the way that new jobs come about, in the way that small businesses, and small businesses, you have a couple of, a $50, $60 million company that's really a small business. Yep. Well, all right. It sounds like you guys have, you're up and running and got lots of great things. Andreas, I've got your name here. I'm not going to let you go. You sound like a real genius in this world, and we're going to have to get more from you so we can spread the word about how wonderful this is. And Bruce, great idea. Great idea. I'm sure that if the attorneys had a way to unplug you, they would probably be doing it, right?
Yeah. I don't want to leave the wrong impression. There's going to be a gigantic cadre of attorneys that are going to embrace us. They're the ones that are writing the contracts and are therefore putting the clauses, our value clause, in a value court clause in the contracts. I'm just concerned about the litigation attorneys. There will be some that are enlightened and would like to save their clients some costs, but they're going to be a slower group to adopt, of course, what we're doing. But we are disruptive, and we're going to the parties themselves that are in disputes as opposed to their intermediaries, and that's why we'll be successful.
Yes, that's wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. Well, listen, Bruce and Andreas, great to be with you. I'm very happy that we connected via LinkedIn, and you persisted, and we had some great conversations, and I know that this is not going to be the last conversation. Did you have an offer that you wanted to make?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. Yes, I did. I wanted to make available to your audience two things. One is anyone that goes on our website at valuecourt.com, they'll see our email address. Send us an email asking for a copy of our clause. We'll get it out to you for free so you can start putting it in your contracts or having your attorney look at it. The other offer for free is, again, contact us through our email address from our website and send us an attachment to any contract, your template contract or an existing contract that you know you'll probably use from time to time, and we'll do a free analysis of it as to where some of the weaknesses are that will lead to disputes because of ambiguities or what have you, and we'll give you some suggestions of how to strengthen it so you can then, of course, go back to your normal attorney and say, look, here's the analysis. What do you think? What do you want to do about it?
Did you give us your email address?
The easiest way is to email Bruce, B-R-U-C-E, dot Rossiter, R-O-S-S-I-T-E-R, at valuecourt.com. And between that address, Andreas and I can, help in a lot of different ways.
Excellent. So wonderful. So glad that you were with us, Bruce and Andreas. You have a great day up there in Silicon Valley, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks so much, Will.
Take care.
Bye, Bruce.
Wonderful. Us old guys are getting the picture, and we're getting with it. Look out. The baby boomers have not yet had their last boom. Here we go. That's it for Pilgrim on the 405 this afternoon. Take a look at us up at Podbean, pilgrimonthe405.podbean.com to see all we're doing. Take a look at octalkradio.net, and take a look at us on iTunes. If you have somebody that you think would be good, or if you want to be on the show yourself, give me a call at 949-355-6060. 6013 or email me at willchrist@willchrist.com. This is the Pilgrim on the 405 signing off for this week. Look forward to talking with you next Wednesday.
You've been listening to the only show that shows you the new frontier. The Pilgrim on the 405 is here.